Hey, y'all, it's Eric again with the I'ma Keep Going podcast. And I told you before about Buzzsprout. Well, guess what? I'm going to tell you again how easy it is and how it's the best way to launch and promote your podcast. I mean, it doesn't take long at all to be online and set it up with the major platforms like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all the other ones. They've helped over 100,000 people get their message out to the world. And in all honesty, all you really need is some small gear like a microphone and a laptop and a quiet place to start recording your dreams. Plus, they'll give you the tools that you need to determine how many people are listening to your podcast and the tools to help you grow it. So what are you waiting on, y'all? Come on. Click the link on the show notes to get started and get a $20 Amazon gift card after you sign up with a paid plan. Easy peasy lemon squeezy, I promise you. So check it out, y'all. It's Buzzsprout, the easiest way to make a podcast. Hello, boys and girls, and thank you for listening in to another episode of the I'ma Keep Going podcast. Of course, I am Eric. I thank you so much, and I really appreciate you for listening in to this empathetic episode. Look, don't forget to rate and subscribe to podcasts, y'all, because I know you want to help me become amazing and to be on a top 10 percentile in terms of podcasts, like I know I can do, and I know I will do, but I do need your help with doing so. So please rate, comment, or subscribe to this podcast and tell your friends about it also. Just spread the word. Let people know about it. Let people know that, you know, my intent is to make them feel better, to motivate them to keep going. So, yeah, do that for your boy. Well, today's episode is all about empaths. And I have my dear friend and fellow resident to the podcast, House of Mine, Angie Mitchell from the Sincerely Angie podcast, joining me. So as a quick side note, someone recently asked me, why do you have the same couple of people on your podcast all the time? And I'm like, because they always got something good to talk about. And the numbers don't lie. So whether it's Renee or Angie on the podcast, y'all show out for real in terms of the listenership. So it's apparent that y'all love them too. But at any rate, I have Angie on today, and we initially were going to talk about something else altogether. I was going to rant a little bit about how creatives are not really being creative during this time of COVID and just sitting around the house lounging on social media or, you know, binge watching something or whatever. But here's the thing, and I'm a firm believer that everything happens for a reason, because the conversation would have just been me kind of discussing my issues with it and not realizing the real reasons why. And most, if not all, creatives are some sort of an empath. They create emotions or they feel the emotions of others. And I never really thought about that idea that, you know, maybe they're not doing anything creative because they feel like they have the weight of the world on their shoulders. And it took Angie's podcast episode recently, Dear Empath, to get me to understand that and to see it from that perspective. So again, everything happens for a reason. And this particular episode further explores the notion of what an empath is, why they feel the way they do, and why they're important to this world. Y'all, this is one you definitely don't want to miss. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this amazing episode with my dear friend, Angie Mitchell. Actually, my whole reason for wanting to interview or for having a conversation last week was about something completely different. But we'll talk about that another time. But this one here is more about, because when you hit me with that empath, that dear empath, I'm like, yeah, I feel that.
Now, you can't say that and then say, oh, we'll talk about that another time. I want to know what it was.
Well, it was more of a we were. OK, so it was going to be about how COVID has stopped people from, it's, you know, we talked about it already, like how COVID stopped a lot of people from becoming creative. And a lot of times people would use the moniker, my mental health is more important than anything. You know, I'm just taking it one day at a time and things like that. But at what point do you begin to say, okay, enough is enough. I need to get back on the grind again. I need to get back on the ball again, you know, because I wanted to kind of talk more about that, because I think ultimately that is very important, especially when it comes to people who are feeling like they're, because a lot of times now people are stuck. They feel like they're stuck now because, you know, during the beginning of COVID and everything happened with George Floyd and everything, you know, all of these things that happened at one time.
Yes.
You know, we wanted to take some time off because we needed it. In fact, you mentioned it. You talked about it on Dear Sacrifices, where, you know, we needed to take some time to heal ourselves. And during mm-hmm. that time, a lot of people have become more complacent or more adapt to the common things like going on social media, watching Netflix all day, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, they're supposed to be working on their mental health. And I wanted to bring up the idea. So, but isn't creating a part of your mental health as well, you know, doing something in a, from a creative aspect or achieving some type of goal or accomplishing mm-hmm. something, you know, whether it be working out, whether it be writing a script, whether it be filming something, whether it be just, you know, creating a business or whatever. I wanted to talk more about that because I believe ultimately that's something that a lot of people just don't, they've gotten way too habitual with mm-hmm. their current situation. They are.
Well, I think that ties into being an empath as well, because if you are an empath and you are dealing with all of the emotions and the stressors of the world, that can kind of knock you off of your course, because you're trying to find your balance, you're trying to find your relief, you're trying to find your reset button. So the, you know, just laying there doing that, and when I talked about this, all of these things came to mind, and it's like, this is why I can't, like, in my mind, I just feel like I want to do this, but I just don't have the strength because so many other things have pulled my emotions and my feelings away from the things that I want to do. So it's more so, it more so does tie into, I'm not saying that everybody is an empath, but for those creatives that are empaths, and oh, see, here I go.
And by the way, we are recording right now, y'all. So thank y'all so much for listening to the I'm Gonna Keep Going podcast. We just kind of went right into the conversation. I got Angie from the Sincerely Angie podcast. You know, she's amazing. Yeah. So I didn't mean to cut you off. I just wanted to kind of get that in there. But go ahead. What were you about to say?
You're fine. But as I was reading articles and just kind of seeing what this whole empath thing is, it said that most creatives are empaths because of their sensitivity to things. That's how they're able to be so passionate about certain things. So if somebody is kind of like off their A game, it's probably because they are empath. And again, I'm not trying to label everybody as that, but for the most part, if you are a creative or someone who creates things, I think that you have a sensitivity to yourself, or you have a uniqueness about yourself that allows you to be sensitive to things that other people aren't. So I do believe that if you do go through a phase of not doing something, you can get comfortable and you can get complacent, which is not a good thing. But it also has, it may be a deeper, a bigger purpose, because no true creative just stops creating.
Right.
They're always creating. Even if they stop creating a podcast, they probably start creating videos, or if they stop creating videos, they may be writing a book, or if they're not writing a book, they're creating a product or something. So a creative never really stops. They may pause, but they don't stop. And as you spoke about in one of your recent episodes, being a filmmaker and how you took a break from filmmaking to do other things. But if you stop podcasting today or tomorrow, I'm pretty sure you will pick up filmmaking, or you will pick up something else, because you're a creative.
Right.
So I don't think that anything ever gets kind of like pushed to the side. I think that you just kind of go into something new. But I do get what you're saying about, you know, not doing anything, just kind of laying there watching TV all day. I get it.
Yeah, man. It's very, and again, I'm only speaking for myself, because I fell into this category, you know, and I know a lot of people, like I said last week on our one of my previous episodes, how I know a few people who we've all decided to just kind of take a little bit of a mental break for you know, because of that, because of everything that was happening for 2020, because we all know 2020 has been somewhat of a shit show. It's been a complete train wreck. But again, it's something that, I mean, there's a lot of learning lessons from this, from 2020. Yeah. And of the people that I spoke with back in the beginning, when everything began to kind of unfold, now, last month, I talked to some more people, to the same people, and they all said the same thing. Like, you know, they're not really doing anything. They're just, oh, we just kind of hanging out. Oh, you know, I watched this, you know, I just finished binge watching something on Netflix, or I just, you know, just going on social media. Like, I really don't have the energy to do anything right now. And I'm like, but you create stuff. Like, so why can't you feel that way? Why can't you get back and try to create something? But I do understand what you're saying as well as an empath, because I didn't look at it from that perspective. Most people are empaths, or most creatives are somewhat of an empath, you know, mm-hmm. and because we are really sensitive about the work that we put out there, and we're really sensitive, and we're always creating certain genres, or we're always creating something. I didn't take that into account, because when some people are empaths, they do feel like the weight of the world is on their shoulders, and you feel like the amount of frustration and the amount of heaviness or whatever, it comes from other places, and they just feel bogged down by it. So I didn't take that into consideration, and it makes sense now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because you want to be able to uplift these people, these same people who are creating things and who are really good at what they do. I feel, and again, I guess maybe that's the empath in me, because I feel like I need to uplift you to get you back to the level that you were on before all of this began to take shape. So it's kind of a cycle, you know, because it's like, I feel how you feel about, I understand how you feel about being an empath, and how you feel about I just need a break. I just need to do me. I need to stay to myself or whatever. But at the same time, here I am trying to uplift you and make you feel like, man, you could do it. I knew you could do it. I knew you can do it. And then when you say, no, I can't do it, I don't want to do it right now, I choose not to do it right now, you're like, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. So I, mm-hmm. you know, I just got a little frustrated about it, you know, because it's,
that's the empath in you, and that's the, right. the heart of an empath. You want to do things for other people. You want to help them. You want to take their pain away. You want to be the one that's kind of like a savior, so to speak, to kind of push them in the right direction, because you see stuff, of course, like you've seen the posts and stuff about empaths, that they see things that other people don't, and they feel things that other people don't. So you've seen greatness in people, and you've seen potential in people, and you're like, yeah, no, don't give up. And you do kind of bypass what they may be feeling, because only because you see the greatness. So it's not a bad thing. It's your heart. It's really your heart that's bigger.
Right. Right. You know, and it is. It is. My heart always goes out to people, and I am. I mean, anyone can tell you. You can attest to this. I'm always the one who's quick to go out and be like, "What can I do? What can I help you? How can I help you? What can I do to make it better? You know, right. What can I do to make you feel better?" And I do that all the time. And a lot of times, you know, I'll do that to the detriment of my own self and to my own well-being, knowing that, you know, I may not be. Knowing I, you know, there are certain instances where I'll try to help someone when I know I shouldn't be helping them, because I know ultimately they have to learn things themselves. But I don't feel right unless I say, what can I do to help? How can I help? And again, even if it's putting me at risk, or if I'm sacrificing some things on my end just to make sure you're okay, then I feel better knowing that I was able to make sure you're okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I did want to bring up, I did want to ask a question though, because I used to feel this way a long time ago, and I still have remnants of it now. I remember a few years ago, I remember having an episode or talking in an episode about how I felt addicted to other people's pain. It was mm-hmm. almost like an addiction. You know what I mean? It was almost like I would help someone. I would talk to people or reach out to people who I know is having a bad time with something. Mm-hmm. And I would see if I could try to do something so I can be somewhat of the savior to that person. You know what I mean? And that didn't, it took a long time for me to understand that's what I was doing or whatever, because I remember one time someone told me, she said, Eric, I don't need your help. I don't need you to come here and try to save me. I don't need that. You mm-hmm. all. And I said, well, I'm not trying to save you. She said, no, you always try to do it. It's my best friend. she's been one of my friends for many, many years. But she said, I don't mm-hmm. need you to save me. She said, you always try to do that. It's like you're hooked on it or something, like you're attracted to it or something. You're attracted uh-huh. to someone else's misfortune so you can try to save the day. And I'm like, no, that's not me at all. I don't do that. I'm just trying to make sure you're okay. But when I got off the phone with her, because it got into a pretty heated argument between them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she didn't need my help. She was one of those people, which I always go back to you, what you say, she just needed someone to listen. That's mm-hmm. all she needed. She didn't need anything else other than for someone to listen. And I would be like, well, maybe do this. Maybe you should try that. How about doing this? What can I do to help you? You know, and I would be, and she would say, I don't need your help. I don't need anything from you. Stop trying to fix it. Stop trying yeah. to save the world. Don't do that. And it took a long time for me to recognize that part of myself, that it was an addiction for me. It was an addiction to talk to people who I knew were down bad and yet still try to save them. So mm-hmm. have you ever experienced something like that before, is my question.
Where somebody feels like I'm always trying to save them or help them
more or less you felt like you needed to do it in order for you to feel better about yourself. You needed to fix yourself. Like you were addicted to it, is what I'm saying. Addicted to helping other people become better.
No, I have not. But my guilty, the part that I'm guilty of doing is not saying no. I do overextend myself to people, but I don't feel like I have to do it. It's just, if I know that I can do something, I do it. And if I can't, I'm learning to say no, you know, more now than before. But no, I never felt like that. It's more so, it really is just, no, I'm here, I can do it, let me do it. Or if I know how to do it, let me just do it for you, that type of thing. And me offering up my services or my talents and stuff like that. But never really feeling like it made me feel better to do it. It does feel good once you help somebody with something. But no, I can't say that that's me.
So that's just my own misfortune, is what you're saying. No, I'm being funny.
But I've noticed that though. It could be the simplest thing, you know, when you and I are texting and you say, let me know if you need anything. And I'm like, Eric. And I don't say anything. I just say, thank you. You know, but I'm like, I can do this. This is simple. You know, well, but I think that's who you are, though.
I know. And that's the biggest. That was the biggest draw for me, because I've changed a lot now, because like I said, I would try to find the people who I know were down and out, and I would try to uplift them, or even it would be to a point where I would not necessarily hate on something or hate on a specific situation. Well, yeah, I would hate on a specific situation. So say, for instance, I'll use you as an example. Say, for instance, you have issues with a significant other or a spouse or whatever. I would be like, oh, well, I wouldn't do that or whatever. I used to do that just to make people feel like, I was needed and not necessarily, you know what I mean? It was just, that was a weird time in my life. And then when she told me, this was about maybe 10 years ago. And when she told me that, I had to stop for myself. I had to stop myself and realize that, you know what? You need to stop that. You need to stop looking for the negativity in people and trying to fix mm-hmm. it. Stop trying to look for that. And I did. And I have stopped that. I still do ask if you need something, though, because that part of me won't leave. That part of me won't die, because it's more of whatever I can do to try to assist you, I will definitely do. I will definitely make sure that you are okay. And I will definitely make sure you are in a good space, because ultimately I get joy. I get enjoyment just by making sure that you're okay, you know. And I think a lot of that has to do with the whole idea of being a service to people, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're being a service to someone, and you're by you being a service to one, you are ensuring they are in a really comfortable space. And again, I'm not, and I no longer do it just for my own self preservation. I do it simply because I want to help people now.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? And again, yeah. that's the whole mindset of an empath. I feel your pain. I feel exactly what you're doing. I feel exactly how you feel. And I want to try to help you. I want to try to fix it for you. And if I can't fix it for you, then I'll at least listen. So, yeah, man, it's good
and
stuff.
And I think that you genuinely, though, because of who you are, you genuinely mean that. So when you are getting off the phone or ending a text with somebody and say, hey, let me know if you need anything. It's not just like, hey, how you doing? Where some people say, hey, and they don't actually answer the how you're doing part as because it's just kind of like a thing that we do.
Right.
You actually mean that. And I mean, that says a lot about you. Most people would not even say, let me know if you need anything or, you know, just on a regular basis. They may say it after you finish helping them with one thing. But to say it after every single phone call or message correspondence or email correspondence, that's truly who you are. And that's genuine to you. And that's a good thing because you are welcoming, taking on others' troubles or their problems or their misfortunes. You're welcoming that. You're saying, hey, if you do need anything, I can help you. That's what you're saying. So as an empath, that's good that you are able to welcome that because most empaths is just kind of like it's painful for us because people know that we're not going to say no and people know that we're not going to do this. But for you to willingly accept that it's big. It's good.
Yeah, it really is. And for the people that are listening who may not even know what the hell an empath is. look, here it is. 17 minutes into the conversation. And
no way.
And yeah, some people may not even know what it is. So let's break it down. For those who hadn't listened to the Sincerely Angie podcast, the episode Dear Empath, I strongly suggest that you listen to it because it's a very, very insightful episode. A lot of the questions that you may have asked yourself or whatever, she pretty much answers them. You answer them pretty accurately. At least for me, you did. but I do want to kind of get into the idea of what an empath is and why some people actually may feel like they may be empaths, but they may not even know they are empaths because, you know, I think someone walked said it once before because, you know, she used to get a lot of flack from meet and greets. That's why she stopped doing meet and greets because she said, hey, I'm an empath and I take on the weight of I take on people's problems. And I think that was the beginning of the idea of what an empath is because I never really, I never knew the actual term for it until until about a year or so ago where I was like, wait, okay. Yeah. I feel you on that. And then I have a really good friend of mine. She said the same thing. She said, you know, I'm an empath. Like I just take on the problems of people's, I take on people's problems of the world. It's not like I do it purposely. It's just that my mind and my heart is on my subconscious is already pre-wired to do that. And that's why I have to make sure that I am in a comfortable space in order to be able to just function daily, you know? So yeah, tell the people if you don't mind what the idea of an empath is.
Okay. But really quick back to Summer Walker. I did not know, I guess, so to speak, I guess, cause this wasn't around a time when I found out what an empath was, but I think I remember her saying that she was she had social anxiety, but it makes sense now that that's the reason because, and again, she's an artist. She's a creative.
Right.
She is somebody who is like Erykah Badu said, I'm an artist and I'm sensitive about my ish. Like the all of that ties in together. It makes sense though. It really makes sense. Okay. So going back to our good friend, Google, what an empath, it says that they are highly sensitive individuals who have a keen ability to sense what people around them are thinking and feeling. Psychologists may use the term empath to describe a person that experiences a great deal of empathy, often to the point of taking on the pain of others at their own expense. And that's just a shortened version. But if you listen to, like he said, the Dear Empath episode, you would hear, I read just a little bit deeper into that article, and a lot of things make sense, like the large crowds. And like, if a friend is crying or if a friend is happy around you, you get happy. Now this, I know that seems like, well, everybody's happy when everybody's happy. No, not all the time, right. But you feel what other people are feeling. And when you get a bad vibe from people initially, you feel something that's like, yeah, something's off with this person. And then when you come to find out what it is, you're like, I knew it. It's because you're sensitive enough to feel energies and to feel vibes and to feel just something within you that says, yeah, something's not right about that person, or whatever the case may be. And you want to fix other people's problems or their pains or anything like that. And that, if you feel that way about anything, you're an empath. Mm. Basically. Mm. It's so crazy because I never really considered myself highly sensitive until I was talking with someone a couple of years ago, and I was explaining how passionate I was about something. And they said, you know, that you know, I wasn't saying that I was passionate, but when I told them about the thing, they say, you know, you're really passionate about this. And then I said something else, and they said, you have a soft spirit. Like you really embrace a lot of things. And I didn't even think to speak on this on a podcast because it's just now coming to me. But like I said on the podcast, everything, it all makes sense now. It makes sense why when I was younger, I always wanted to be by myself. Because if I was around a group of people, I would see one person had an attitude. One person was shady. One person was, you know, I'm like, nobody's even paying attention. Nobody's looking at her facial expression. Nobody's seeing. None of this makes it. It all makes sense now, though. It really does. And it doesn't mean that being an empath is not a bad thing. It just really means that your heart is big and you are sensitive. Right. And I also mentioned in the podcast that highly emotional people, I'm not necessarily highly emotional, but I think that I feel really deep. I just don't express it. So I don't always cry. I'm not always angry where someone can see it. My facial expression, you would never know how I'm feeling, but deep down inside, I'm all kinds of things are happening. I think this is why I like to nap, because I'm doing so much on the inside that it exerts me. Like it takes a lot of my energy.
Well, you know, the idea of being highly emotional, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to be, you know, on the outside, highly emotional, like you said just now. You know, you may be highly emotional on the inside, internally, and that is just as important as being highly emotional externally. You know, you want to be able to, because you, either way it goes, you still exhibit some level of high emotions, and you want to be able to understand why, and you gravitate more towards it. So I think I am the same way. In fact, you know, my wife and I, we've had a discussion about this before. She said, man, you just sometimes way too sensitive. And I'm like, I can't help it. Shit, it is what it is. But, you know, and there's something else that you talked about on your episode as well, which I will link your episode to the bottom of the show notes. So y'all can definitely go in and listen to it.
Okay.
There was, when you said how, whenever you're having a conversation with someone, and you're very, very passionate about it because it's something that just touched you and it's something that's like exciting to you and things like that. But then someone else is like, oh, that's kind of cool. And they don't exhibit that same level of emotion as you do. And you get upset. Right. Yeah. I thought I was the only person that did that, you know, because it was like, because it's like, you know, if you're bringing something to me from you know, with a level of high energy or whatever, I'm going to feel that high energy. I'm going to feel the exact same level of emotion. I'm going to match your emotion, right? With whatever it is you're feeling. You bought a new car. Oh, hell yeah. You know, you got this new job. Oh man, that's what's up. Like, you know, and I'm just as proud as you are. You know, I'm just as proud, if not prouder than you are, you know. However, if I exude that same level of emotion, and you don't reciprocate that, or you don't match it, then I'm pissed, because it's like, I'm sitting up here explaining something to you, exhibiting something that is very, very important, or very sensitive, or very emotional for me. And you're not exhibiting that same behavior that I would do too. Right. I used to get really mad about that. But now it's like, you know, you, like one of my friends said, you got to kind of meet people where they are.
Yes.
So you have to be able to, so the people that you know aren't going to, and being completely transparent, I'm just going to be completely candid with this. And I've talked about it before. That's how my wife is. My wife is like, obviously whenever she gets emotional and gets high strung about something or whatever, I'm all for it. But whenever mm-hmm. I get emotional and high strung about something, she's like, okay, cool. Cause she's more of an analytical person. And I've said that several times before. Sometimes, you know, people who are very analytical, extremely analytical or whatever, they don't exhibit that same level of high end emotion that you may exhibit at that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she is an example of that. And for a long time, I would get really upset. Like, why you just, you know what? I'm just not going to tell you anything anymore, you know, because you just don't even understand how I feel about this. And she's like, no, I get you. And I love the fact that you're doing it. I'm just not as high strung towards this as you are. And I used to get mad about that until a few years ago, somebody said, you got to meet people where they are. Meet them where they are. Understand that everyone isn't the same way as you. And it took a long time for me to get to that level as well. So how do you deal with people that aren't reciprocating that same level of emotion or that same level of high energy that you would, being an empath?
Well, before I would look at it kind of sideways, like, so I just would be like, so you're not happy for them or whatever. Right. But now, like I said in the episode, since being able to define the reason why I am the way I am, it makes it more easier now to accept other people when they don't receive things the way I receive it, because, you know, I'm just a little bit, and it's not I'm better than you are or anything. It's just that my level of sensitivity, maybe.
Right.
The thing that allows you to feel something more for a person is just different from another person. So, like I said before, I would feel like, oh, that's, why wouldn't you be excited about that? And it's just like, well, you know, everybody's not you, Angela. So you have to.
Right.
Now I know that I have to just kind of I don't expect me from other people now. I don't expect somebody to respond how I respond. So.
Right. And and it's hard because you want to be able to try to have that. You want people to match your emotion, and because you're emotional about it, because you're happy about it. You're very, whether you're happy or you're angry or whatever, you know, you're emotional about it, and you want people to be able to match it. And a lot of times when it doesn't happen that way, you know, it's hard. It's very difficult it's very difficult to get out of your feelings about it, you know, because we like, oh man, you know what? Screw you. Don't even worry about it. Don't even worry about it. But it takes a long time for us to be able to get out of that type of emotional, hindrance or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. It's just weird. And see, now
it is weird.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, I also mentioned how I had a conversation with someone just the night before, and we were talking, and I was like, you know, your vibe is kind of off. Like, is everything okay? And they were like, no, I'm fine. Everything's good. And a week or so later, they said, let me tell you what was wrong that day. I'm like, why would you tell me I was wrong? Like, why would you tell me nothing was wrong? I knew something was off. And it's like, see, this is what I'm talking
like,
about.
This is like, don't gaslight me. Don't have me sitting up here thinking that it's just me tripping
and
or whatever.
I am actually paranoid, or I am actually off. Like, my feelings don't lie. I know these things, and I don't have to always be right about it. It's just like, let's say that you were a person who worked with, a professional person who worked off vibes, like a tarot card reader or a psychic or something. Mm-hmm. And they say, hey, do you have a son whose name starts with the letter L? And then, you know, you say, no, his name doesn't start with L, but actually like the L is silent or something. I don't know. I know this is probably the worst example, but what I'm trying to say is you're basically telling this person who knows what they're feeling and knows what they're receiving, that what they're saying is not right. So it kind of makes them second guess their abilities. And it's not that I need psychic abilities or anything like that. It's just, if I know something is wrong,
let's talk about it. Let, you know, it's wonderful that I'm in tuned enough with you to even recognize that something is wrong. I'm asking you if something is wrong. So let's address it. Like, now is the time to address it because it's been brought to light. So, you know, the weirdest thing. I felt victory, though, because I'm like, I knew I wasn't wrong. I felt victory.
So did you, personal victory. Did you confront them about it, or did you like just let it go?
No. Listen, one thing about me, a lot of people may not know, but I do not hold my tongue. I will say whatever I am feeling. So if I feel like a vibe is off, I say it. And then, well, this is what I was getting to before I went into my horrible example. But when their vibe is off and they tell me that nothing is wrong, it in turn turns my vibe off. So my vibe is now off. And now we're both sitting like everything's, you know, cool, peachy, whatever, but it's actually not. So I'm steaming on the inside. And it's like, I know that something is wrong.
Right.
And in therapy, you know, I told the therapist, I was like, so here's how I am. And this is, and they said, well, maybe you should just learn to let things go. You know, if they say that nothing is wrong, just let it go. And you've given them the opportunity to say something. If they don't say anything, then you go ahead on and move from there. You've done your job by trying to address it. I said, okay, so that's what I'm working on. If you say no, I leave it alone. But then a week later, here you come confirming what I thought. So yeah, I do confront it. And a week later, I'm like, see, I told you, why wouldn't you blah, 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 blah. So yeah.
Right. Ooh, you so petty.
I am because it's like, don't do me that, because this is, I don't want to be that person that's like, is something wrong? Is something wrong? Is something wrong? Is something wrong? No, I want to be the person that, hey, is something wrong? Actually, well, no, everything is not okay. Let's talk about it. That's what I want to happen in my head.
Right.
But that's usually not how it happens.
Well, you know, and one thing about that I will say is that, because I have some trouble with that as well, because I am that person where I will say, what's wrong? I know something is wrong. Tell me what's wrong. What's going on? What's going on? And it'll get to a point where they will get frustrated. Like, look, just chill. Yeah. Just chill, bro. Yeah. Like, it's not that serious. You just chill. I'm like, oh, so something is serious. Okay, so tell me what it is then. You know, I will be that person. But now I'm working on, and again, I don't know if that's me removing the empathic part of myself. But now I'm working on a point where, okay, if I know something is wrong and you say nothing is wrong, I leave it be. I ask one time and I leave it be. And like you said earlier, you know, in the inside or whatever, I'll continue to internalize it or whatever, because I know something is off. I know it. I know something is off. And then, but eventually I calm myself down and I say, you know what, eventually if it's something that's of importance, then they will bring it out. You know, they will talk about it. They will discuss it. If it's not anything of importance, then you have to let it go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I remember telling one of my friends this, I said, you know, certain things you're never going to get an answer for. There are certain things you're not going to get an answer for. And you have to be okay with that, you know?
Yeah.
And if it's something that's bothering someone, like I'll give my daughter, my oldest daughter as an example, you know, or my second daughter, I'm sorry, she's in college. And, you know, there'll be times where I used to always ask her and she'd be like, Dad, chill. Everything is all right. Everything is okay. And I'm like, no, it's not. I know something is wrong. And then like maybe a few days later, whatever, she'll be like, Dad, you know, I had this going on or whatever. I'm sorry if I was, but now I'm beginning again, meeting people where they are.
Yeah.
You say, if I ask you something is wrong, you say, no, everything is, no, I'm fine. Okay. I let it go. Mm-hmm. But just understand that I'll be here whenever you're ready to discuss it, because more than likely you will discuss it, you know? So, how do you feel about people who are like, how do you feel about people who try to question your level of empathy and who try to question it, and who, and what I mean by that is, like, for instance, the person who said, like, when you said about the person who nothing is wrong, but eventually you were proven to be correct. So how do you deal with people like that?
You know, that is a work in progress. I'm still dealing with it because I think without bashing the person, I'll just say in general, I think that it is a self-awareness that they have yet to come to. So for me, I believe that I'm very self-aware. So I know if something's wrong, I can speak about it. I know if I'm lying, or I know whatever the case may be. But the person who I seemingly have the disconnect with, it's almost as if they are still trying to process their way of handling things. And in the process of them processing their way of handling it, they diminish or they disregard who I am and what I feel. Right. So I think that it takes me learning how to deal with them and giving them the opportunity to speak when they are ready to speak, and not allow what they say when I feel and know better to diminish my feelings. So if they're saying nothing's wrong, like you just said, okay, nothing's wrong, fine. And then I leave it alone until they're ready to talk to me. But when they say nothing is wrong, it immediately hurts my, I don't think ego is the word. I think it's my intuition that they are hurting, because I know better. So I have to deal with that so that I don't start to feel or change my vibe to the same vibe that they're getting me. And a post that I heard, I actually posted it on social media, and it was about learning how to not absorb other energy, but it's basically learning how to manage being an empath. I'm gonna find it, and once I find it, I'll tell you what it is. But yeah, okay. That I think is more so understanding that person and how they operate, and then me operating accordingly, but not letting it get to me.
Right. It's frustrating. It is. Mm-hmm. You said it just now, and of course we talked about it a few seconds ago, how internally you're struggling with trying to keep your intuition in check, keep your gut in check, because you know ultimately something is up. You know, ultimately, you know, these people, the people you try and help, obviously has something going on. But you, and when you ask, you know, and maybe sometimes that's what it is as well. Maybe you don't need to ask. Maybe you shouldn't ask. Because if you don't ask, then you don't have to worry about your intuition being bruised, you know, or worry about your, you know, worry about your own thoughts getting inside of you and saying, you know, something ain't right. You know, something's up, you know, so maybe not asking at all. But I can't even sit up here and say that because I'm me. That's who I am. Right. You know, I can't change the fact I am someone who is sensitive. I'm a man who's sensitive. You know, I can't change the fact I am someone who is understanding of other people's problems, who is sympathetic to other people's problems, who's empathetic to other people's problems, and who tries to help in some capacity, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard. It's a really difficult process. And for a long time, I wanted to try to get that part of me away from me, you know. I wanted to be like, you know, I don't know if you've ever watched Mad Men with Don Draper. Yes, first of all, it's a damn good show. I watched, you know, it was one of those things where I ended up watching like the first couple of episodes, and I was like, man, you know what? I can dig this. Let me watch the rest of it. I ended up watching all 7 seasons. Like,
what?
Was it 6 seasons or 7? 7 seasons. I ended up watching every single episode, and I was able to relate to the guy, the main character, because he was an asshole, for lack of better terms. Mm-hmm. But as you begin to watch the show and you begin to progress, and you begin to understand why he's an asshole. And the reason why he was an asshole is because he's been kind of like treated harshly his entire life. But anyway, you know, I try to model my persona based on him, based on being that person who's extremely devil may care. Like, I don't care about, I'm just cool. I don't care about what you got going on or whatever. Okay, I'm not even going to ask you what your problems are, because it's not my business. It has nothing to do with me. I tried to be that guy. It doesn't work. Because I eventually go back into the whole idea of, what's wrong? Tell me what's wrong. And I begin to feel sympathy, not sympathy. I keep saying sympathy, but I continue to feel empathy for the person that has whatever issues or whatever problems they may have going on. And one other thing that you said, too, that I definitely want to get people to understand. Therapy works. You got to see a therapist, y'all. You got to see that. Yeah. In order, especially if you're an if you're an empath, because there's only so much of this you can hold before you begin to blow up and become, again, you become a complete asshole and just, or either that or your anxiety begins to take over. Your everything begins, like all the negativity begins to take over or it takes shape. You have to unload it. Like how you were saying just now about the post that you was looking for. You have
I did find it.
You find it? Okay. Like, you know, it's not safe to internalize it and to keep it in. You have to find out a way to rebound it or to repel it, you know, from you eventually, or to unload it, basically.
Yeah, you do. So it's a not very long, but it's too long. I'm not going to read everything. I'm going to just read the part that stuck out to me. And I was like, yes, I have to master this. So it says, as an empath, the greatest skill you must master is the ability to observe without absorbing. And I was like, okay, I can do that. I can do that. I can look at this situation, but not absorb it. I have to work on that so that I can master my emotions and master what I am taking in. Because I'm telling you, when I saw that post from 8 years ago on Facebook about I wish I could take my friend's problems and make them go away or handle them myself, I remember the exact situation right now that caused me to write that, because it weighed heavy on me for weeks. And I remember feeling like, what is wrong with me? Like, this is not even my situation. Like, why am I dealing with this? I'm telling you, it was crazy. It was weeks. It may have been months, but for a very long time, I just was thinking about this situation and how can I fix it? And how can I tell her this without sounding like I'm hating? Or how can I tell her this without trying to ruin or sabotage her relationship or make her think that I'm not happy for her or whatever the case may be? But it was a really bad situation and I just could not get it off my mind. So I have to, that is the part about an empath that I want to master, not taking others' problems on to where it's like harmful to me. Now, if it's my nieces or if it's a true situation that I really wish I can take on, give me that all day long. But if it's something that I know is just very temporal or very temporary, I'll take it. You know, I'll learn how to just observe it and then just let it go on about its business, because it's not long lasting.
Right. How do you think, what do you think would be one of the first steps to observe but not absorb? What do you think one of the first steps would be to do that?
I think to look at the person that you're dealing with and what they have done historically in similar situations, because let me just say, for that situation years ago, it was a cheating situation between a man and a woman. And in that moment, I should have, you know, just kind of either showed her that I'm there for her, my support or whatever, and then allowed her to make her own decision, because historically that has happened and she hasn't really done anything about it. So this time is no different. And they're still together to this day. So it's like I did all of that stressing and all of that for nothing. But historically she has dealt with this cheating stuff in the past. So it's not really like that was going to change anything.
Wait, real quick. So this person dealt with it in the past prior to you making that post, or was this the first time that person dealt with
it? Oh, no, it was the first time with me being her friend that had happened. But she had dealt with cheating with her significant other in the past, and she forgave him and they still, you know, were together. Gotcha. I just thought by the severity of that particular situation that something would have changed or, you know, but gotcha. Yeah, no, that it wasn't the first time. So I think that for me to observe without absorbing is to look at the person, check their track record, or look over their track record and say, if is this something that they normally don't really put much stock into, or is this something that I know is painful for them? And then actually just have a conversation and say, hey, you know, if I'm here, if you need help, but, you know, I'm going to not tell them that I'm going to keep my distance. But for me, myself, just tell myself to keep my distance, to not allow it to be a hindrance to me or be harmful to me. But I am there to be helpful if necessary. So if you need a shoulder to cry on, or if you need to just vent and let me just listen, I'll do exactly that. And then once we get off the phone, I'll probably have to pray or something like that. But I think that moving forward, to just completely look at what has happened in the past. And I know that seems weird because people can change. You know, this particular incident could be the straw that breaks the camel's back. So I don't know. I think it's going to take some trial and error for me to get through it. But I think I'll be able to.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially with the idea of checking someone's track record, because if they've had a history of doing this, of encountering certain scenarios that, you know, that has affected them. And if you're on the tail or the first couple of times you hear about it, and, mm-hmm. you know, obviously you want to help and console and things like that or whatever. Or like you said, it just weighed heavy on you. I strongly believe in the idea of checking someone's track record to make sure that mm-hmm. if it's not something that it's a continuous effort, because if it's something that happens often, then at mm-hmm. that point, who looks like the fool? The person that you're trying to help, or, you know, do I look like the fool for continuing to try and be there for you, knowing that you're going to go through this over and this path over and over again?
Right.
Or is that person a fool for continuing to allow themselves to be placed in that particular position? And I'm not talking about, you know, what happened, you know, 8 years ago with your friend. I don't know them at all. I'm just saying in general terms, do you, you know, at there is some point where you have to say, okay, you know what? It's almost like, you know, somebody who's like a kid or whatever, after you tell them so many times, don't touch that, touch that, and they touch it anyway. And you're like, I told you not to touch it, you know, mm-hmm. but, you know, we tend to console them anyway, but then they go back and do it again. And it's like, at what point do you actually cut off your, at what point do you cut your losses with that particular scenario? You know, still be their friend or whatever, but cut their, like, I can't help you at that point. Or yeah. Betty, don't even come to me and tell me about it. You know, is that something that you believe also could be, that could be a remedy for, not absorbing their feelings or whatever?
I think that it's possible. I think that it's possible. I am not really the person who's going to say, especially if somebody's in the moment of going through something, I'm not going to say, nope, I didn't told you before. Don't come talking to me now. I'm not that person. I'll still listen, but in a very, I'm gonna call a thing in a shady way or in a sarcastic way, because that's who I am. I'm sarcastic, but in a shady way or a non, you have to really know me to know that I'm being shady. But in a way like that, I would say, well, the last time this happened, I told you to do such and such. So if that didn't work for you, or you didn't try that, maybe you want to try that. So I'll still be there. But to a point where it's just kind of like, yeah, nah, I'm not giving you any more advice, or I'm not, you know.
Right. Right.
But yeah, there comes a time, but I'll still be very, I'll be me about it. I'm not like a very finite person where it's just like, nope, I ain't saying it again. I ain't doing it again. Right. I'm not going to tell you that to your face, but internally I'll find another avenue to take.
Right.
You know,
I remember, one of my old, an old coworker of mine many, many years ago, was going through something. I was having a conversation with her about it, and I was telling her that, you know, she was like, you know, well, it was some type of relational issue or whatever. And, she was mm-hmm. saying that, you know, the guy that she was dating or whatever, he was condescending towards her. Like, he was just talking down to her and things like that. And they were dating. They weren't actually together. And, I would say, you know, well, I mean, you know what to do. I mean, if you don't want that, if you don't want that type of relationship or whatever, then you know what you got to do. You know, yeah. you have to cut your losses, you know. And she said, well, I just don't know how to do that. I don't know what to do. And I'm like, well, I mean, just follow your gut. You know, if you feel this isn't what you want, then mm-hmm. then express it, you know, allow it yeah. to, you know, express it or whatever. A year and a half later, they were still together. They ended up being together. And it had gotten to a point where he started verbally abusing her, calling her fat, calling her ugly, you know, just being a real jerk about it. Mm-hmm. And she said, I don't know what to do. I said, well, I mean, you know, again, me being the person that I was at the time, well, it's only a certain amount of time before things start to escalate any worse, you know, and the last thing, and again, you don't want that. You don't need to be in that type of environment where, you know, you don't need, especially if you are not okay with somebody talking down to you, then don't let anybody talk down to you. Leave the situation, mm-hmm. you know, but what do I do? I'm already a year invested into it. I'm like, well, I mean, you know, I told you a year or so ago that, you know, look at the signs.
Yeah.
I said, but at the same time, you know, I understand how you feel, you know, things like that or whatever, whatever. 6 months later, he hit her.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah. And he hit her. And that was the straw that broke the camel. The straw that broke the camel's back. And she said, she came back to me and she said, you know, Eric, I should have listened to you 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When you told me don't tolerate it then, I should have left then.
Yeah.
And now, you know, I don't know if the guy's in jail. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what happened. But obviously they ended up breaking up after that or whatever. But it's just the idea of, because I told her, I said, you know, I can't help you at this point. Because, you know, at this point, I've already suggested certain things to do or whatever. And you didn't do it. Which brings up another thing, too. When you offer your sound advice to something, or when you are sympathetic to somebody and you offer something like that and they don't accept it, how does that make you feel?
Listen, I am not an I told you so person, but you know, I told you I don't hold my tongue.
Right.
So if a friend is going through something, I'm going to give them my opinion. I'm going to tell them what I believe. And there's another scenario. I cannot say it because it's very unique. It's not unique, but if I say it, there's only one friend that has done it, and it's just, I'm not going to put their business out there like that.
Okay.
But a friend shared with me that something was about to happen. And I said, I don't think that's the best decision because of ABC. And they said, well, if you don't like it, then you just don't need to attend whatever. You don't need to come. And I said, okay. I said, if that's how you truly feel, of course, I still attended the event. But a couple of years down the line, maybe a couple of months down the line, it was like, I should have listened to you. And it's like, you know, well, I didn't want to push the issue after you told me, you know, blah, blah, blah. But here we are. If you would have just got some type of confirmation. Not confirmation. If you would have just thought on what I said or slept on it instead of just immediately defending your decision
emotionally. Yeah. Attaching yourself to just being emotional about it.
Yeah. And I remember another time, you know, just sharing my advice to somebody and telling them what I think they should do or how I think they should go about doing something. And they said, oh, okay, sure. And then a couple of weeks later, they came back and said, I tried it your way and I got it my own way. It doesn't work for me. But they actually never tried it, but it was more of an ego thing. Like, I probably stepped on their ego when I said something. And it's like, if you tried it, you actually would not have been getting in your own way. You really would have been able to succeed because you weren't doing the thing that you were continuously doing that was not working for you. I know it seems very vague because I'm going around the corner. You know, I'm going all the way around the issue because I don't want to say things and put somebody's business out there because I believe that they listen to you. You know, right. But in those situations, it's like, I'm not saying anything to hurt you or harm you.
Right.
My advice is never going to be that. If I tell you something, it is my honest opinion. And Yanni, you've had her on the podcast, Ariane Washington. She was on one talking about the mental health and her being a counselor. And she'll tell me, she's like, Pinky, if you tell me no, I trust your word because you ain't never lied before. You ain't never been wrong before.
Right.
And it's like, I can appreciate that because people should know me well enough to know that my intentions are in a good place whenever I tell you something. I'm never going to tell someone something to set them up. I'm not going to say, hey, go walk across the street over there knowing that there's a pothole bigger than the size of the Grand Canyon in the street for them to fall in. I would never tell you that. I would say, hey, go up two blocks, take a left and make another right or something like that. I'm not going to do that to you. So it's frustrating when people don't take my advice because it's in a good place. It's from a good place, I should say.
Right. And your intentions are pure. You know, your intentions are pure. And at the end of the day, I mean, I've been knowing you for almost 10 years now. And, you know, you've never been one to sabotage a scenario, you know, for people.
That's
you know,
word. Yes, yes.
You know what I mean? And a lot of people do take that. They do take your, you know, what you say or whatever. But again, sometimes the ego gets in the way. Mm-hmm. And because the ego gets in the way or whatever, they say, well, you know what? I'm just going to do it the way I do. And which is, again, it's fine, you know, because a lot of times we all need to kind of fall on our ass every once in a while, so to speak, in order to be able to understand the information that was given to us. It's just like our parents, you know, our parents and our older relatives would tell us, I've done that before. I don't think you should do that, you know? And you're like, well, you know what? I'm grown. I can do that anyway. I have a scenario, which is like that too, which again, I'm not going to put anybody's business out there, but there's a, someone, who's close to me. She has a relative, that is, looking to, do something. But they don't have the resources or the backing that they need to sustain it. Right. And then, you know, and they're very, I won't say immature because they're not immature, but they're very, new to this endeavor that they're trying to go towards or that they're trying to attain. Mm-hmm. And my friend is telling the relative, hey, I'm telling you, this may not be the best look for you. It may not be the best idea for you to do this. Yeah. And they're like, well, you can't tell me what to do because I'm an adult. I'm grown. I could do what I want to do. And they're like, and my friend is like, all right, now I'm telling you, this is based on like past history. It may not be the best look for you. And so, you know, and eventually, I mean, my hope is that everything works out for that person, you know, for the relative and everything. But all signs are pointing to the idea that it may not work in that person's best interest. But again, a lot of times people don't take they internalize your advice or whatever, but their own ego and their own emotion gets in the way of that. It clouds it clouds their judgment. And because it clouds their judgment, they don't think rationally about certain situations. And because they don't think rationally about it, it fails. A lot of times it would fail. Now, obviously we don't want it to fail. We want it to be successful. I would like to be proven wrong.
Yeah.
Prove me wrong. You know, prove me that you are the exception and that you are an anomaly to this.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if you do that, then I will graciously say, you know what? My bad. I was wrong. Yeah. You did your thing. But all signs are pointing to the fact that it's not going to work. You know what I mean? But
right.
And again, and it's not we're coming. It's not like, you know, you were coming to that person in a malicious manner because you weren't. You were being straight up. You gave your opinion on it. You gave your thoughts on it. And they thought your thoughts were shitting on their ideas. And because you thought their thoughts were doing that, they bypassed your thoughts. And then again, a few, you know, some time later, whatever, they be, man, like, I should listen to you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that kind of sideline is a little bit of a gratification for me when people say, I should listen to you. You know, even though we shouldn't be thinking that as an empath, we should be like, oh, but man, no, you know, but
because it solidifies your feelings. It solidifies. And we don't know everything. We are basing it off of the senses that we feel.
Exactly.
We feel certain things. And it's like,
if the person who needs the assistance, if they would take into consideration who they're speaking to. That's like if I was talking to you, Eric, and you say, Ange, I don't think you should stop podcasts, and I think you should continue to do it. And I'm like, yeah, no, I want to stop. And then 5 months down the road, somebody reaches out to me and say, hey, I wanted to partner with you, but I see that you're no longer doing a podcast, but I just wanted to tell you had a really great thing going for you, and I wish that you could have continued or something like that. And I'm like, dang, man. But if I did not listen to you, or let's say if I would have listened to you, I would not have missed that opportunity. But I knew you as a person has never steered me wrong. So if you take that into consideration, has Angela ever steered me wrong? No, she hasn't. Has her intentions always been in pure? Yes, they have. Or if somebody's looking at Eric, if Eric is telling me no, I trust Eric's word because he has never steered me or anybody I know of wrong. So I'm going to take his word for it. So I think it takes a matter of people looking, just like I said, it takes a matter of me looking at somebody and looking at their track record. I think it takes for somebody who is needing the advice to look at our track record and say, hey, you know, this person, they have never steered me wrong or anybody I know wrong. And they're usually pretty right about things. I'm going to go with what they say.
Right.
I'm listening to them. And I think that we will all be in a better place. But the gratification comes with knowing that what you were feeling was not wrong. Right. And that's the best part about it, because you can start to second guess things. And you know how people always say, go with your first mind. Well, it's really not really a first mind thing with me. It's just like a gut feeling. Like, and I tell people this all the time, talked about this on podcasts, YouTube videos, all this stuff. When I make a decision, when I first purchased my house, I was telling everybody I knew, because I'm 23 years old and I'm purchasing a house. Nobody I knew was purchasing a house at that age. And so I'm telling everybody. And the first thing everybody says is, you're not married, though. You don't have a boyfriend, though. Why are you going to wait till you have a family to purchase a house? And I said, and rent for the rest of my life? And I'm like, no. I said, what if I don't get a husband until 10 years from now? I'm supposed to rent for 10 years. And so at that moment, I stopped telling people that I was going to buy a house, because I knew that what people were saying was trying to deter me from what I was already convinced that I needed to do. Right. And buying a house was the best decision for me at that time. I don't regret it at all. I was way ahead of the curve. I was doing things that people weren't even thinking of. And I didn't even come from a house. My mom had always lived in an apartment. So for me to step outside of what I had always known to do something that I knew was generational wealth in the long run, hey, I know that I can trust my own word, because in my heart and in my gut, I feel like, okay, I'm going to do this, and I don't want anyone giving me their fears. I don't want somebody saying, oh, well, girl, you shouldn't do this because, or you should. I do it on my own now. I make sure that I feel 100% about it. And then if I feel 100% about it, I have no regrets, and I go and I do that thing.
And maybe that's why a lot of people are very hesitant to receive the advice from you or receive insight from you. Not because of you, but because of other people, because of what mm-hmm. happened with other people. You know what I mean? How other people will try to say, girl, I wouldn't do that if I was you. I don't know about that. You know, mm-hmm. and that's where they have to determine the difference between you versus other people versus someone yeah. else or whatever. Like you said, your insight has never steered anyone wrong, because it's coming from an empathic place. It's coming from you internally. It's coming from a gut instinct. And yeah. like you said at the very beginning of this, you know, when it comes to being an empath, everything is about what your gut is telling you, like you know your gut feeling, your gut intuition or whatever, because your gut is mm-hmm. the one that's telling you something isn't right. You know, something is wrong, you know, and you're asking, you know, the other person what's wrong and things like that. So that's why being an empath, I believe, is always going to be, you know, when it comes to creative or whatever, it's going to always be in the forefront of who I am and mm-hmm. Obviously of who you are as well. And it's all about just channeling it into something a lot more creative and channeling it into something that's going to benefit not only you, but the person that you're trying to assist, you know?
Absolutely. And when I said the sensitivity of an empath, I also mean that the sensitivity is kind of like spiritual. So it's coming from a different place. It's coming from a higher place. It's coming. And I talked about this in Dear Signs. I talk about how I notice certain things. Self-awareness. I talked about the in Dear Self-Awareness. I talked about these things, but it's not saying that I'm closer to God than anybody else. Cause I can honestly tell you, there are some times when I feel like God hasn't even heard me yet. So it's not that. It just right. means that we have a sensitivity to a realm that is just a little bit outside of who we are. So most people just kind of live day by day, but us on another level, you meditate, you do yoga, you have a relationship with God. So all of these are things that when you give out something, it's coming from a pure and a sensitive place. Now, there are people who operate on a whole different realm of living. It may be demonic or whatever the case may be, but you can tell when somebody is coming from a pure or a real place. Like it's not something that they're putting on, like it's just genuinely them. So as an empath, or if you are dealing with someone who's an empath, just make sure that you know that person well enough to take their advice or trust what they're saying. Or even if they're revealing something to you about themselves, accept who they are, because I don't think I chose to be an empath. I think this is just the way I was born. I'm glad that I have a label for it now, so that a lot of things about myself make more sense.
Right.
But I also don't want people to confuse that. And when I say, you know, spiritual or sensitivity and gut and intuition, that it's like everything that I feel is right. Because there are some times when I'll be still and I wait for a sign or wait for some type of something, and I'm just not sure about the thing. And so I just don't do it at all. Like if I can't get any type of feeling, I feel nervous about it. I feel happy about it. I feel in between about it. If I can't feel one for sure way, I just don't do it. And so if I can't give somebody some clear advice, I just say, I'm gonna pray about it for you or something like that. You know, so it's a lot to it.
Yeah,
and
it
I'm
is.
Still learning, but it's a lot. But this was a really great conversation because we really dive deeper into what I talked about in my 30-minute episode. And it's good that we were able to talk about this jointly, because I can say a whole lot by myself, but right. to hear it from another person's point of view, a male point of view, you know, it just helps you to be able to get more insight on what this thing is. And it brings a broader conversation to the topic. So
it
now
really
people
does.
Can see, okay, this is how Angie feels about it. Oh, these are two empaths talking. So let me hear what they have to say about it. So this is good.
Yeah, it really is. It's very good because, you know, again, these are two different empaths, you know, who are from two totally different sides of the spectrum, but at the same time, we both think, feel, act, and just create the same way. Like we all have that same level of feeling or that same level of emotional, yeah. Discourse. So when it's all said and done, you're right. This is a very good conversation to have. And I believe that the people that are listening to this will have a little bit more of an understanding of what an empath is, and even to see if it's something that they are, or if it's something that they know of someone who is, and, you know, hopefully this can shine a light on the reason why they feel the way that they feel, like
right.
it did with me. You know, it shined a light on, like, when I listened to your interview or when I listened to your episode, it shined a light on who I was, because again,
yeah.
it's one thing when you know how you feel, but when someone else feels the same way and then mm-hmm. you hear another person feels the same way, you're like, okay,
yes.
you know what?
Yes.
I may be onto something with this, you know?
And I didn't even bring up the whole empaths and music. I didn't even bring that up, which it's a reason why certain people just can deal with the whole genre of music. Like they can deal with rock, they can deal with classic, they can deal with gospel, they can deal. There are that, you know, I'm not getting into this, but we didn't even talk about that. But it makes sense that you like music, I like music, and you and I clicked right off the bat. So
right.
it makes sense. It makes sense. That's all I'm gonna say.
It does. No, it really does. It makes sense because, and yeah, you're right. That's a whole nother conversation that we can definitely have at another time about just being, you know, just being an empath and just being able to understand. I have another friend, a really good friend of mine, Tequila. She's the same way. She she calls herself an empath as well. And she said, that's how her and I were able to click so quickly, you know, mm-hmm. and we were like, cause she has similar tastes that I do, just like you have similar tastes that I do. And it's like, we get each other. We get it. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's cool. But at the same time, it's frustrating too, because it's like, we get each other, but at the same time, it's like other people don't get us. Like, they don't get who we are. They don't get how we are. They don't get why we act the way we act. They don't get why we do the things we do. They don't get why, you know, we press sometimes about, you know, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you, you know, they don't get why we do that. But, you know, hopefully this episode will shed some light on that for the people, you know? So,
yeah,
good stuff, man. Always a pleasure. We are hour and 10 minutes.
Just in. About to say, how long was this?
Yeah, it's about 1 hour and 10 minutes now. We rolling, and it's so amazing. And I just thank you so much, Angie. It's always a celebration when we link up. You know that always. You know, so, and we always have something good to talk about. So,
yeah.
As always, where can they find you?
They can find me at sincerelyangiem.com.
Okay. Okay.
And all my links to everything are there. So if you wanted to find the YouTube, the Twitter, the Instagram, everything is there. So yeah, sincerelyangie.com for everything. There's links everywhere.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank y'all so much. Yes. Thank you so much again for just being a shining light as always. I really appreciate you. And yeah, we'll be back again, y'all.
So thank you.
Yeah, and y'all stay tuned, because the Keep Going moment is right after this.
Bye, y'all.
Welcome back to the IKG, and here is your Keep Going moment. Now, I truly believe that everyone should get a reset in the morning. If you choose to bring up what happened the day before, or carry the bullshit of yesterday into today, then that's more of a pressing issue in yourself. Now, obviously, there are some exceptions to that, like, for instance, the pain of losing someone close to you, or a bad breakup, or some other type of traumatic experience, because of course we know that those do take longer to process and much longer to heal from. But what I'm talking about are the normal stresses of the day, like, for instance, if someone cuts you off at work, a coworker is getting you on your nerves, or if they ran out of your favorite food. Those are normal stresses that can cause levels of anxiety, and they need to be removed at night. I have a store that I visit twice a month for work, and to be honest with you, I would sometimes dread going into that store because the clerk there was just awful. And not necessarily awful in terms of physical awful, but just really emotionally draining. These were my early impressions of him based on the interactions that I would have with him. So I would usually go in there in the evening time, maybe around 3 or 4. I would go in there and try to get my work done, but the guy there was just extremely condescending and very unapproachable. I would ask him a question about something and he would snap at me. He actually kicked me out the store once before. So I figured this time around I would go in the morning, so that way I wouldn't have to worry about him because he wasn't there. Lo and behold, he was there in all of his mean ass glory. And so I said my normal things like, good morning, how are you? And surprisingly, he was extremely pleasant. I mean, to the point where it was actually kind of scary, because it was a complete night and day difference. He was very helpful, funny, and kind of witty too. And I left there feeling pretty good that morning. So I did it again just to test my theory. I went there yesterday morning and he was pleasantly cool again. In fact, there was this little girl that was checking out with her grandmother or mother. Hey, I'm not judging. And she walked out of the store with the candy. The grandmother ran after her before checking out, and he thought that was the funniest thing. When she came back in, they both kind of laughed about it because it was a good moment. So it made me wonder if he is this engaging every time. Then it made me think about the fact that he works at a convenience store, and we all know those can be real stressful jobs throughout the day. So it made me think about the idea of if he's at 0 in the morning and at 100 by the time I see him. My point is, he obviously resets throughout the day. And again, he may have a frustration level of 100 by the time I see him in the afternoon. But in the morning, you can definitely tell that he resets himself and he looks at each day as a different day. Not the same old day that's carried over into the next. So allowing yourself to feel like shit because of the normal stresses of the day is not fair to you or anyone that you interact with. It's not their fault that you are in a funky mood. Use the night to reflect and ask yourself, what could I have done better? And then wake up with the mindset to do better. That was your keep going moment, y'all. And I thank you so very much for listening into this empathetic episode of the IKG. I'd like to thank Angie Mitchell. Once again, you have always been a blessing and I really, really appreciate you because it's always a celebration when we link up. I say that all the time because I believe it. And I can't wait for the next time that we have a great conversation about something else. So until the next time, y'all, may the best of your todays be the worst of your tomorrows. My name is Eric, and I will see you all soon.